The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, I'm Jose Candelario, and this is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. Today, I am with a business mogul, entrepreneur, you name it, speaker, you need whatever you need. Kebra Smith, right? Kebra Smith?
Smith-Bolden.
Okay. Hyphenated?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Where are you from?
Right here in New Haven, Connecticut, born at the Hospital of St. Raphael, when it was that.
Where did you grow up?
So I grew up on Sherman Avenue. My mom was 16 when she had me. So we lived with my grandparents for the first 10 years of my life. So right on Sherman and Scranton.
What was your mom's name?
Marilyn Annette Thomas.
So you were raised by basically by the whole family.
By the whole family. I was blessed in that, like, my grandfather owned a multifamily house. And my aunt lived on the first floor and all my cousins. And I lived upstairs on the second and third floor with my grandparents, my mom, and her sister until she got married and moved out.
Okay.
Along the way.
Oh, very good. But, and your mom, what kind of lady was she, or is she?
Oh, my mom is a beautiful, God-fearing woman. And she always put faith before everything. And even as a 16-year-old mother, you know, she was pretty clear on the fact that she couldn't give me a lot, but what she could do is give me a foundation of faith. And so I spent every day and night at church and in choirs and prayer groups and Sunday school and all of that my whole life.
So she gave you that foundation.
And I'm so thankful for it.
What is something that you take from her? What is an ethic or something that when you're making decisions, you know, because sometimes you get that creeping up on you, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, my mom and I basically grew up together, although we were never, you know, she was not one of those, I'm your friend. No, she was always my mother, even though we were so close in age. But I definitely, well, one thing I don't give her enough credit for, and I want to start doing now, is that she was an entrepreneur. She had an in-home daycare, and growing up, I hated it. I had to work for free, you know, and I was surrounded by a bunch of kids all the time. But she was like actually my second entrepreneur. My grandfather worked at Pratt & Whitney for over 30 years, but he also had a lot of side hustles. So he was a painter. He would clean banks after hours. So I would go with him. And when my mom had me, he was insistent that she not get on any state assistance or receive medical assistance. He picked up two extra jobs and gigs to be able to pay her hospital bill and bring me home from the hospital without her having that debt or to be tied into, you know, state funds. So I really respect him for that.
Oh, wow. And we got to give him a name.
Oh, yeah. My grandfather, William Smitty Smith. He was well known. He loved the Exxon gas station on Whaley and Sherman. He went there and had coffee every day, spoke to all the people, you know, was really a pillar in the community, trustee at my church that I still attend now, St. Matthew's Unison Free Will Baptist Church on Dixville Avenue, where the pastor is Kevin C. Hardy.
Smitty, tell me a little bit more about Smitty.
He was the best. He was... you know, so originally from Greene County, Greenville, North Carolina, worked in the tobacco farms, was a sharecropper at one point, or his family was, decided to do that mass exodus from the South to Connecticut, and New Haven was the place. I think their first home was on Reed Street in the Ville. And over the years, my grandfather bought the home on Sherman Avenue and really created a place, and all of our family, you know, at some point or another was able to come there, stay there, visit. It really was a beautiful environment. My grandfather had his struggles, you know, because of probably the trauma of how he grew up, where he grew up. And he did, you know, have a bunch of some issues, but overall great guy, and never, and I'm just talking about internal personal things, but was just again, a pillar in the community, a pillar to our family. Like, people will tell you to this day, like, he gave many a people, you know, money to go off to college, down payments on homes, help people get cars, you know, find jobs. He was just an amazing person. And as far as me, the first man, because unfortunately my father, who is alive and well and actually now lives back here, but at the time had his own personal struggled with addiction, was out of state. So my grandfather was the first man in my life to show me love, to show me, you know, that I didn't have to rely on, you know, a boy or a man to do things for me, that my family was there to support me. I remember he was like, "You want some of them earrings them girls got, you know, but don't go doing that with nobody. Let's go to Macy's and get you some earrings." You know, he was that type of person. You know, you want a fancy dinner, I'll take you to a fancy dinner. You don't have to do anything that you don't feel you don't feel comfortable with doing just to get those things. And so I appreciate that.
Wow. I mean, you see a person, right? But you don't understand how much of that foundation there. I mean, for him to be fiscally responsible, how much did you gain from that, seeing finances and how he managed money?
I really learned a lot. I think I get a lot of my hustle from him. at one point, I was working multiple jobs and had multiple businesses that were up and running. And so I definitely get a lot of that from him. And he has also instilled in me the need to reinvest in your family, to support the things that your family would like to do. You know, unfortunately, a lot of times in our communities, in Black communities, Brown communities, we're not passing down legacies of, you know, homes and you know, great credit or financial. We're usually passing on debt. But that wasn't my grandfather. Like, when he passed away, he left money, you know, he left property, and he was able to instill that foundation in many homes and people, not only family, but in the community.
Do you speak? We can talk about him all day.
Yes.
We can talk about him all day. But I always like to ask, what is one thing, though, that you hone in on? I mean, when you got to make a tough decision, what would he say?
I won't say what he said because it just gets censored on that. My grandfather was very community, but also very like, forget these people, forget the people who will drag you down or not. You know, he would say, get rid of dead weight and keep pushing forward. That would probably be, that's a nice way to say what he would say.
Wonderful. Wonderful. We can talk a little bit about Nana.
Okay. So I had the,
what was her name?
So to have multiple grandmothers.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So married to my grandfather was Mary Smith, who was actually my step-grandmother. So she was not my mother's mother. My mother's mother, Ruby Smith, lived in North Carolina. So when my grandfather did his transition from the South to Connecticut, he took my mother with him, his, you know, his only daughter with him at the time. And so I wasn't really raised with my grandmother in the South, but we went to visit often because we would go back on those lovely car trips that I love so much. I'd sit in the front seat with my feet out the window, you know, with my grandparents before that was illegal. and we would go and visit. And my grandmother, Grandma Ruby, lived in poverty. You know, like, I remember going to visit and there was like an outhouse that you had to use, and I refused. I was scared. And then I'm sure my cousins was like, and then there's rats and snakes, you know, whatever. So I just refused. So they had to put a bucket on the porch for me. I mean, it was crazy. When I visited, a total difference. And not that we were rich or anything here in Connecticut, but we had what we needed, a roof, working water, you know, those kind of things. So it was, it definitely was a contrast in lifestyles between what was going on in the South and what was going on here. But I love my grandmother. She taught me so many things, like how to cook. She would come and visit, and chicken and pastries was one of my favorites. So she taught me how to make that, you know, and it's like chicken and dumplings, I guess, called it chicken and pastries. And also her hard work and spirit and her foundation of family and faith were something that I got from my grandmother that was down South, Grandma Ruby. And may she rest in peace. She passed away of cancer it's probably been about 20 years now. My Grandma Mary, who was my step-grandmother officially, but treated me as I was her grandchild. I never called her step-grandma or anything. That was Grandma Mary, or just Grandma, actually. She didn't even get her name afterwards. You know, some of my grandmothers I call Grandma Ruby, Grandma Hattie, Grandma. But she was just Grandma because she was the person that I knew. And she would tell me things later, of course, that I couldn't remember about the type of person I was and to guard it. You know, I remember her telling me, she was like, you know, when you were a little girl, we had a neighbor who was an older woman, you know, rarely left the house. And I guess didn't have the best hygiene all the time. But she would make me things like blankets. For years, I had a blanket that she had made for me and some different things. And I appreciated that. She was a sweet lady. Every time she would give me something, we'd go and I would get the gift and I would give her a hug. And my grandmother said, you know, one time I asked you, like, why are you hugging her? Like, you know, it smells, it's, you know, comfortable. Like, and she said, you know, she was like, you were like, because she did something for me and she needed I wanted to hug her in gratitude or whatever I had said, thankfulness. And my grandmother's like, you know, that keep that core of the person that you are, like where you can kind of see but not judge or not, you know, be affected by that, but just want to do the loving act or the kind thing. And I think I've kept that throughout my life as well.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm all emotional right now. I'm Jose Candelario. These are the words of Kebra Smith
Bolden.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I keep forgetting this. It's hyphenating. So we'll probably figure it out someday how that works. So there's certain things that we take, and you know, to stay that core person, to always be grateful and to always express that love for your community, for your neighbors, in your own fashion. Right? In your own fashion. Mm-hmm. Is that the motivation that you took on in starting businesses?
Yes, for sure. I'm a nurse. I've been a nurse this is my 22nd year of being a nurse, and a registered nurse. And I've always worked in the community. And I started my first couple of businesses just based off of needs I felt in the community. So the first was a home improvement company because I had a friend who did construction work and was a general contractor. And he needed a job. He had just come home from prison. And, you know, I was like, all right, we're going to start you a business and get you going. And like his first month home, like we made about $20,000, you know, from the work that we had gotten. So that was a need. Someone needed employment and I created it for him. Then the second business I opened was a home care company because I'm a nurse. So I provided non-skilled nursing services. So that's home health aid, homemakers, PCAs, those services. And we service plenty of people, lots of people from our community, but at rates that were affordable with people from the community. So they got culturally competent care, you know, even though we were non-skilled, because I'm a registered nurse, I would do for free, you know, weekly blood pressure checks and follow-ups and sort their meds, like whatever they needed in between as part of the service. And that really, again, started because I was in church and, you know, people would come up to me and be like, you're a nurse. Do you do this or do you have people that can help with that? And I was like, I do. And I started just like making referrals. And I said, this should be a business, you know, and we went from there.
We're jumping. Let's go back to your childhood. Okay. I'm so sorry. Because you talk about how all this entrepreneurship that you've been surrounded by growing up. Tell me a little bit about where you went to school in New Haven.
Mm-hmm. So I went to, my first school was Bernard. and then I went to East Rock. And then I went to Sheridan. And finally, well, not finally, Hill House for 3 years. And my senior year of high school, we moved to Maryland. And so I graduated from Bel Air Senior High. So I claim Hill House all day. You can't. I'm Hill House strong. But I didn't officially graduate from Hill House.
Okay. And then you for nursing, where do you?
So I was an LPN first. That's a story in and of itself.
No, no. Let's go. Let's go. I mean, I'm here for it.
Well, one thing I do want to say, talk about in my childhood, which I felt were pivotal, were a couple of different things.
Okay.
Number one, when I was 6 years old, my aunt died of an overdose, and she was like one of my favorite people. This was my father's sister, and my grandma Hattie, who we haven't talked about, who was significant and a pillar in this community. But anyway, my aunt Stacy, that was her name, and she died, and so my mom tells me about her death. And she was my favorite aunt. I spent a lot of time with her, especially as my father had moved out of state. And so she was like my person on my father's side of the family. And she was a model. She attended Simmons University. Like, when I tell you, one of the most beautiful people I ever seen in my life. And, you know, this was the 80s, 82. And she was experimenting, you know, free base, blew her heart up. And I'll never forget going to her funeral. I don't go to funerals to this day. Because of this, but I'll never forget going to her funeral, and it looked like she was gray. You know, she looked like she had been through trauma. She just didn't look like herself, and it was so traumatic for me. And, you know, that's so I knew right off the bat, like, I would never do drugs, any drugs that could do this to me, you know. And so that was something that was very pivotal in my childhood. And there are other traumas that came along with that. And then, you know, being that my mom had me so young and was in school and trying to work, and my grandparents were actually young, too, and working people, I got sent to babysitters. And, you know, a young girl in different households, it just wasn't, I experienced a lot of traumas, you know. And I really feel like that has affected me in a way in which that I am more sensitive to traumas and the needs of especially our young girls for safety and protection, was hypervigilant with my own children for those reasons. But that is why I do a lot of the work that I do to this day in the community, because I experienced just about everything that a young girl in the inner city could.
I always talk to people about, we talk about, you know, addiction and drugs and vaping in schools and all this and that. And I'm like, they're all a distraction from some trauma. Mm-hmm. And what would you encourage someone to go out there and share their story? And
absolutely. Like, I think about it all the time. You know, most of my perpetrators and people who have done things to me throughout the year when I was a child are still alive, and I see them. I have to interact with them in some way, shape, or form, you know. And so I, at one point, was concerned about protecting, you know, images and people. I don't know. But of late, I feel more willing to share, to talk, to be open and honest. And if you put it all together and figure out what I'm talking about, you know, that's on them. you know, they've never made it right with me. But I do feel like telling our stories is important. So people, because people look at me like I've heard all sorts of things, you know, like I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth. And, you know, I grew up a certain kind of way when I grew up on Sherman's Crib to a 16-year-old and a drug addict. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it's very interesting how things are, how people may perceive you. But I feel like when you, I'm an empath, you know, I can feel when someone and I can relate about a trauma. And I do feel like I've done the necessary things, you know, the counseling, the therapy, you know, definitely giving God all of my burdens and allowing him to exchange that for peace and joy, which he has done. So, you know, I'm very, very thankful. But I do think it's important to talk, to tell people your story so that people don't feel isolated in their traumas. You know, you feel like you're the only one. And I do feel, though, that in this day and age, in 2025, more people are talking about trauma. You know, we're putting it together, especially when you come from an inner city and it's not just like one trauma we experience. It's multiple traumas, and being able to look at those traumas as not normal things. Because I feel like over the years, we just kind of normalize them. You know, this is what people get killed. You know, it's just fine. It just happens. It's another one bites. No, that could never be the attitude, you know, when every time someone is murdered in this town, every time I hear of some tragedy or a child being hurt or mistreated or abused, like it affects me. I have to stop and take a pause. And I thank God for that, because that I don't just get in the routine of life, like, but that I take a pause and acknowledge the people and places and things around me that are hurting or that may have needs.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario, and this is Kebra Smith Bolden, hyphenated entrepreneur, boss lady, speaker, motivator, everything you need in your life right now. Mm-hmm. And we're all here for it, as the young people say, because I'm not that young. Talk a little bit about Miss Hattie, because okay. When you said you lit up when you talk about the young lady.
Yes. So my grandmother was Hattie Lynn Turner. She was a resident, and she lived in Florence Virtue Housing while raised her children. My Aunt Stacy, the one I just spoke of, most of her older children there, worked for the New Haven Police Department as a juvenile screener. She would, any person that got arrested under the age of 17 or had some interaction with the police, they would send her to their homes, and she would go in probably like a storm. I know my grandmother, like, what's going on in here? You know, like, and look in refrigerators and look around the house and say, well, this is why this young man is stealing. They have no food. Let's get these people some food. And why are you sitting here, mother? Where's your job? Well, let's get you a job or get you some training so that you can have employment that can sustain and support your family. And let's help you with getting in routines, you know, for your family every day and keeping this place clean. Like, she was one of those type of people, you know, and I thank God for that role, and so many people do. And I thank God that I was able to go along with her on a lot of these occasions, or just be with her. And people would come up and say, you know, Miss Hattie, you changed my life. When you came to my house, you know, I was defensive at first, but you helped me in so many ways. And I heard that countless times when I would spend time with my grandmother. She attended Bethel AME Church. She after working at the police department, which she retired from, she lived in Bella Vista, continued her work. She was a the female Masons, like, she did, you know,
Eastern Star.
She was that, and she participated in a lot of programs, part of the New Haven Club, the National Association of Negro Business and Professional Women, which I just became a member of. You know,
congratulations.
So yes, I'm walking in her footsteps in many ways, but she gave me that foundation. So my grandfather was very community focused, but in an untraditional, you know, not professional way. You know, my grandmother professionally was a community servant that used her organizations and her employment to to pour back into the community. And so that's where I got a lot of that from, you know, trying to find ways to leverage my business, leverage my work to uplift and uphold and support our community.
It's crazy how one thing lends to another, right?
Right.
You never know that I got through this hardship to learn this, and now it equals this, and then that led to another hardship.
Right.
To where over time.
Yes.
You became an LPN?
Yep. So I became an LPN first. So my grandfather lost. How do I get back here? So at 17, I became pregnant while I was here in New Haven. My daughter's father was 10 years older than me. Totally wrong situation. He has since gone on to, he passed away when she was 17. She's 31 now. when I moved to Maryland, I was pregnant. Nobody knew. So I attended my last year of high school, had my daughter, got a full scholarship to Morgan State University. Attended as a commuter. My grandfather ended up getting diagnosed with lung cancer, and being that my mom had moved to Maryland, because our whole family did, I ended up moving back to Connecticut to care for my grandfather. So I stopped attending college, you know, gave up my scholarship, came back to assist and care for him, focused on that, ended up meeting my husband, having triplets. And then my grandfather's health went downhill. He had these amazing hospice nurses. So I always wanted to be a nurse. I really always wanted to be a doctor. But I had, you know, after I had my daughter, I'm like, I guess maybe I should start with being a nurse and then maybe I can work from there. I stopped school, came back, cared for my grandfather. He had these amazing hospice nurses.
So this is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario, and this is Kebra Smith-Bolden doing her thing. But now you are in your latest venture. You have, it's not like a simple venture. I mean, people can just say, oh, you're selling this. But no, it's an event space. It's a fashion. It's a fashion stop. You can go and get wardrobe, look fly. On top of, you know, providing
cannabis products,
it's a variety. You have a variety store. Is that because of your entrepreneurship to not just settle on one thing?
Well, it's more related to the license. So I have a social equity license. So my cannabis establishment should be centered in social equity. So that means a bunch of different things to a bunch of different people. You know, the most people I believe who have this license feel like that just means they got to give their cousin, you know, the social equity position in their company. And then that's all they have to do as a real give back. Me, I feel like that means that business has to be centered in community, all community, even if that means that they don't consume cannabis. You know, so this business should be a space for anyone who was adversely affected by the war on drugs. We just so happen to also sell cannabis, and that is how we sustain the social equity aspects of our business. So, yes, we have events, we have meetings, community meetings, we have, you know, opportunities to share traumas and information and to heal together and to use cannabis as an alternative to pharmaceuticals that are, you know, very damaging to our bodies and our organs, and to utilize cannabis to help with everything from pain to issues with sleep to issues with trauma. And I really am proud to be able to provide a product that I know is tested, that's safe for my community to consume, and that is an alternative to things that would normally cause damage.
And we're located at
169 East Street, New Haven, Connecticut.
And the website?
LitNewHaven.com.
And the social media tags is Lit New Haven.
Lit New Haven.
Okay. All right. Yeah. What in the past in experiences, because you have held several businesses that led to this one, what are you tapping into the most?
So definitely my nursing, because this is medicine. Although I have an adult use dispensary, meaning that it's considered recreational, not medicinal. The only reason for that is because it was almost cost prohibitive to do a hybrid, which would be medical and adult use. My nursing degree and understanding of medicine, understanding how the body works, knowing about our endocannabinoid system, you know, that is why I chose this particular business and the opportunity. I mean, how often people really downplay or don't really realize the significance of the legalization of cannabis in our state and then soon on a federal level. But it literally is an act of social justice. This was an ability to get people's records expunged. So I worked to get cannabis legalized here, and there were certain pillars that had to be in place in order for me and, you know, my little crew to support legislation for legalization. It included getting people's records cleared and expunged for cannabis-related crimes, which had ruined many people's lives. And so that happened, to get monies from this industry. So our licensing fees, which are significant, like my cultivation license cost $3 million. So to get those licensing fees put into a fund called the Social Equity Fund, and that fund be distributed to communities affected by the war on drugs, disproportionately impacted areas like New Haven, Hartford, Bridgeport, Waterbury. And then the third pillar that had to exist, which it does, was that it created an avenue for people who look like me, people who were affected by the war on drugs, who qualify as social equity licensees, to become entrepreneurs in a $1 billion, projected to be a multi-billion dollar industry. And so I feel like, you know, because of that, there is a different level of responsibility with this license, and I'm very proud to have been a part in doing that. Also, what other opportunities would we as a community have to create, you know, at least a handful of millionaires off of a new industry and be able to then take that industry and leverage it for the betterment of communities? We wouldn't have that opportunity again.
There's a young lady out there right now thinking about starting her own business, selling cookies, lemonade, you name it. What would be your advice?
Number one, make sure that that's something that you really love to do, because there are going to be days when you'll find no other reason but your passion to continue, you know, your purpose. You know, I definitely feel like I'm on a path of purpose. Cannabis is just a tool. But my purpose is to create spaces and places for healing and to have funds to support it. That's really why I do what I do. And so, you know, I really feel like if you don't feel like this is your purpose, it's not your path, then you're going to die out. Like, that's not going to be enough to propel you just because it's something that you think might make money or maybe could, you know, be something that you might want to do. You have to know that you want to do what you're doing, because again, especially for me, in a highly regulated environment and a high, you know, cost environment, you know, so many times where I got the door slammed in my face or denied. I mean, I had to sue the state of Connecticut when my license was denied. I mean, there were so many points in times at which I was just like, let me just go back to being a nurse. I made good money as a nurse. I was able to do good things as a nurse. But because I know that this was God's plan for me, and that he placed me on this path, and that even though people may not see it, that God has allowed me to get a portion of his vision to see where he's taking me. And so that's what's kept me connected. So find your reason.
Find your reason. Thank you so much for your time. Yes, of course. I do appreciate it. This has been the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This has been Kebra Smith-Bolden and her delightful story. Again, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And to everyone out there, thank you for listening.
Thanks, everyone.